continue some of the thoughts we had this morning, found in Philippians chapter 4, and talk about being reasonable. We talked about worry this morning and anxiousness, and as I mentioned, some politicians say maybe if you're not worried, then you're not reasonable. Well, you know, we talked about worry this morning and how you really don't need to be worried or anxious. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, Paul says, "Let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Be anxious for nothing." So Paul is teaching us, he seemed to believe that it's unreasonable for us to have to worry about anything. Be anxious for nothing is what he says. And we discussed some of the reasons this morning why we shouldn't be anxious about this life. But I want to look at verse 5 this evening and look at this command to be reasonable. Verse 5 says, "Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand." So what does it mean to be reasonable? And sometimes people find, you know, this word or this virtue a little bit hard to pin down, especially if you look at a lot of different translations of this verse. You'll find that it's translated in many different ways. The word is and I have a hard time pronouncing Greek words, epikase is the word, or epikase. And what it means, or Strong's Greek dictionary tells us what it means, is to be mild, to be gentle, to be moderate, to be patient. And it's one of the words that it seems that, you know, a lot of different translations translate it in a different way. One of the most untranslatable words in Greek, evidently, because the King James Version calls it moderation. Tyndale's Bible calls it softness. Reams says it's modesty. The ASV and the Revised Standard Version calls it forbearance. The English Standard Version says reasonableness. NIV, gentleness. The New Living Translation, considerate. And so you can see how all these things relate to each other and how, you know, they're kind of closely almost the same, but you don't see a whole lot of solidarity among the translators when you look at how this word is portrayed. I want to share just a compilation of comments that I put together from several different sources regarding this word and what it means to us. That it describes that courtesy and graciousness which should characterize a Christian gentleman. The term indicates something of the power of yielding, the ability to give way to the wishes of others. It is the spirit that enables a man to bear injuries with patience and not demand all that is rightly his due for the sake of peace. It is the poise of soul which enables one to sacrifice his own rights, not by necessity, but out of generosity and sympathy. It is the opposite of stubbornness and thoughtfulness. It is the opposite of contention, rigor, and severity. What were your thoughts as you read that? As I read each one of those descriptions of this word translated reasonableness, I thought, I want that to describe me. I want these descriptions to be me. And that's what Paul has said, let your gentleness, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. And so there's a couple of important elements that we see here in this verse. First of all, it's something that needs to be developed in us. That I am responsible to react to people and circumstances in my life in a certain way, with gentleness and with forbearance. So do I have a choice in the matter? Well, certainly I do. I have a choice on how I react to others and react to
to different situations. So it's not a matter of, well, this is the way Randy is, and this is the way he's going to react, or this is your personality, and somebody else has a different personality, and they're going to react in other ways. What I'm saying is that you definitely have control over your reactions. One of the things that's kind of a comedic element in some films is that you can have a character that's screaming at other people at the top of their lungs, but then when they answer the phone, oh, hello. You know, and so they change on a dime depending on who it is that they're talking to or what situation that they're in. So, you know, what's happening there? Well, somebody is making a choice to be angry or making a choice to be belligerent, and it can change at a moment's notice depending on who it is that you're dealing with or what it is that you're dealing with. So your gentleness is a quality that can be developed. And so it's not just a matter of, well, you don't have a choice. It just comes naturally. It's something that you learn to do, learn to be reasonable. I think this is especially true when it comes to looking at 1 Timothy and in Titus when it comes to the qualifications of elders. One of the qualifications is to be gentle and not quarrelsome. In 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 3. And it's really an essential quality of any leader, certainly of a leader in a congregation. But you can see how that would be useful in any leader. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 24, the phrase is used that one must not quarrel and be gentle to all. Also in Titus chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, it says, remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. And so if you notice who is being addressed here, it's those who are in the church. They're to be respectful to all. It's something not just for a leader to have this quality. It's something that we should all strive to be, and that's to be peaceable and gentle and show humility. All Christians are to display this virtue. James describes it also in James chapter 3 that this is an attribute that comes from the mind of God and from the wisdom of God. James chapter 3, verse 17, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure and then peaceable and gentle and willing to yield, etc. So that's the mind of God. He wants us to have that same mind as well. So two things that you see here is that, number one, this quality needs to be developed. It needs to be developed in me. It needs to be developed in you. And the second part of this is if you have developed that quality, what's going to happen? It's going to be known to everyone. You don't have to go and tell someone, hey, did you recognize that I'm meek and gentle and humble? Did you recognize that about me? It's something that you don't have to tell anyone. Let your gentleness or your reasonableness be known to everyone. So go shout it from the rooftop how gentle you are. No, this is probably a difficult part of this because we have to have that perception. People have to perceive us in that way. And the problem is that I and probably many others find it very easy to be considerate to some. And I find it very easy to be kind to some people. If you have ever been in an office environment when coworkers are talking about something and then they realize that there's a customer on the phone or there's a customer in the room, their whole tone changes because they're going to talk to each other differently than they would talk to a customer. And I can remember a time when I was at EBSCO how how a customer service person there, it's ironic, but the customer service person there was berating, you know, the mental ability of one of the customers and how to set up files for printing. And they, you know, they used some colorful language, not crude language, but they basically said the customer was dumb, and they didn't know that I was on the speakerphone with the customer at the time. Fortunately, I don't think that they heard it because there was too much other background noise in the room, but I muted the phone. I said, I'm on the phone right now with the person you just called stupid. And then, so the tone of that changed. So what I'm saying here is that this ability to be meek and gentle and kind, people turn it on and off. And we want to apply that towards some others. And then there's others that, you know, we're not going to have that attitude at all. And that's a challenge. And we have it, certainly have some good examples that we can follow in the scriptures of letting our gentleness be known to everyone. Paul describes Jesus with this same word in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1. Now, I, Paul, myself am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of myself. Now, he said the meekness and gentleness of Christ. So Paul is making his plea to the Corinthians to accept his apostolic authority, which, you know, that's a lot of what 2 Corinthians is about, for him to avoid any need for him to exercise discipline when he comes, he's basing this authority on the gentleness of Christ. So Jesus had every right and the ability to bring justice to evildoers who mistreated him. But did he do that? You know, that's one of the most powerful things that you can see in the life of Christ, is how he was mistreated, how he was lied about. He did nothing to deserve the kind of conduct that he received. He restrained his power, and he reacted with kindness. You know, that's a plot device that's used in a lot of movies where there's a fight between two people, and finally the good guy he's able to take the life of the bad guy, but he doesn't do it. You know, he has mercy. He's standing there, and the bad guy's saying, go ahead, kill me. Sometimes they beg to be killed, and the hero won't take vengeance. He won't do what is clearly in his power to do. And Jesus clearly had power to do whatever it was that he wanted to do, but he restrained his power and he reacted with kindness. Another example of this is something that's very recent for us to understand in our studies, and that's David and Saul. You know, in 1 Samuel chapter 18, we see in 1 Samuel that David, his victory over the Philistine giant Goliath was not well received by everyone. You know, there were people of Israel that were very, very well pleased with this. In fact, you know, some of King Saul's servants were well pleased with this. The women certainly were pleased with him, so much that they praised him in a song. King Saul's daughter, Michal, was also pleased with him in the beginning, so much that she married him. King Saul's son, Jonathan, was also pleased with David and gave him a place to stay. But all of this caused, eventually, Saul to be very angry and to view David with suspicion. He sought to kill David and thought that David might take over his kingdom. Well, he was right. David did take over the kingdom, but that was something that was already in motion. Have you ever felt that way about someone? That they're out to get you? Have you ever felt like David, that no matter what you do, that there's nothing that you can do to make peace with that person? I'm just taking a wild guess here that probably everybody here is thinking of of someone or something that's either current or in the past, that they've had a situation like that with someone, where they felt like someone was out to get them, and maybe they found out later that they really weren't, or maybe they found out, yes, indeed, that person was unhappy, and there was no way to make peace with that person. So when we talk about being reasonable, was Saul somebody that could be reasoned with? No, there was no reasoning with him at this time. If you look in 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 8, it says, "And Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom?" So first of all, we see that Saul is very angry. In verse 9, how is he looking at David now? Well, what had David done for Saul? You know, David did for Saul what nobody else had been willing to do, and that is to go and fight the Philistine. But verse 9 of chapter 18 says, "Saul eyed David from that day on." So he's angry. He looks at David with suspicion. And verse 10, it says, "The next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved in his house while David was playing the lyre, as he did day by day." Saul had his spear in his hand. And so he raved in the midst of the house. He's angry. He's certainly not reasonable at this time. Verse 12 said, "Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul." Verse 13 says, "So Saul removed him from his presence and made him a commander of 1,000. So Saul just couldn't stand to be around David at this point. And he also dreaded him, it says in verse 15. "And when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fearful awe of him." Now that story is very fresh on your minds as we've covered it recently in our Bible class. But what Saul's approach to David was he was seeking to murder him. He sought to kill David on multiple occasions. When you look later on in chapter 18, chapter 19, both Michal and Jonathan end up on different occasions saving David's life. He flees from his life. In the next few chapters, we see David, you know, among the Philistines. So, if you were David, how would you react to such a dangerous and unreasonable person? When I encounter an unreasonable person, someone that's being unreasonable toward me, what is my reaction to be? 1 Samuel 24 really is a case study on reasonableness. Because Saul, at this point, takes 300 men, and he hunts for David, and he ends up in the same cave as David and his men, and David had the opportunity here to rid himself of this unreasonable person. 1 Samuel 24, verse 4, "Then the men of David said to him, 'This is the day of which the Lord said to you, Behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it seems good to you.' And David arose and secretly cut off a corner of Saul's robe." Now it happened afterward that David's heart troubled him because he had cut Saul's robe. So he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." So David restrained his servants with these words and did not allow them to rise against Saul. And Saul got up from the cave and went on his way. How is it that you would have reacted? You know, we've talked at lunch today about, you know, the detail of which we've looked at David's life. And you know, there are some things that aren't pretty in David's life. Certainly his sin with Bathsheba, you know, stands out. But there's other things where he didn't restrain his children and made other poor decisions. But, you know, I really prefer to think of David as we see him described here. That he is somebody that is respecting God's anointed and has the opportunity to trade being unreasonable with vengeance. Because there is no reasoning with Saul. And even those that are around David said, you know, this is your chance to take care of this. Well, take care of what? Take care of having to run all the time. You know, there's just think of the peace that would cause David's life at this point to have this situation taken care of. So David, you know, cut off the tip of the robe. What was the intention? You know, I sometimes have thought, well, this was a prelude to taunting, that you know, here's what I could have done. Here's what I could have done. You see, I've got part of your robe. But notice what David does with that piece of the robe as you read on. In chapter 24, verse 8, David also arose afterward, went out of the cave, and called to Saul, saying, "My lord, the king." When Saul looked behind him, David stopped with his face to the earth and bowed down. And David said to Saul, "Why do you listen to the words of men who say, 'Indeed, David seeks your harm'? Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today in my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you. But my eye spared you, and I said, 'I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed.' Moreover, my father, see the corner of your robe in my hand, for that in it I cut off the corner of your robe, and did not kill you. Know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you. Yet you hunt my life to take it. Let the Lord judge between you and me, and let the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you." That's a very moving and humble reaction on David's part. I don't know how David could have said that any better to Saul. "I have the corner of your robe, but I'm not going to do what others encouraged me to do. And you see, I have no weapons. I have nothing. I'm not going to take your life." And he starts this off by bowing down to the ground and saying, "My Lord and my King." Now, probably most of us would say that Saul did not deserve this kind of respect from David. Nor did he probably expect it. But he's saying, "Your eyes can see that I did not and I will not hurt you." In verses 13 and 14, he goes on and continues. "And David said to his men," I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong passage. Chapter 24, verses 13 and 14. "As the proverb of the ancient says, 'Out of the wicked comes wickedness,' but my hand shall not be against you. After whom has the king of Israel come out? After whom do you pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? May the Lord therefore be judge and give sentence between me and you, and see to it and plead my cause and deliver me from your hand." So, you don't understand what's going on here. David is still being humble. He said, "I'm not going to do anything to you. And what value do I have? Why is it that I'm so important that you're chasing me? What are you chasing after, a dead dog or a flea?" So he's using humility. He's using a self-abasing approach here. David certainly has the upper hand in this situation. But he's saying, "I'm not the wicked man who's going to use wickedness against someone else." To Saul, he's saying, I'm a dead dog or I'm a flea. I'm harmless to you. But why do you seek to kill me? But I'm going to let the Lord settle this. I'm going to let the Lord handle this justice. So David showed Saul something about himself. That Saul is unreasonable and that David is reasonable. And even Saul, you know, concludes this in verse 17. You are more righteous than I, for you have done what is good to me, though I have done what is evil to you. And you've noticed in our studies that Saul said something similar to that on several different occasions. But David did not have to announce to everybody that he was a reasonable man, but he kind of did here to Saul that I am reasonable. I'm not going to return wickedness for wickedness. And you can't help but notice that David's willingness to make this decision not to return evil, it was based on his faith in God. He's going to let God be the judge of this situation. And certainly he would not have made that choice lightly with the things that he had experienced. I can imagine that the temptation to go ahead and take that matter into his own hands and be done with the hassle and the hunting that had been going on would have been very tempting. But he didn't do it. He's a man after God's own heart. So going back to Philippians chapter 4 and verse 5, why should we be reasonable? Well, Paul says, because the Lord is at hand. And you may think by default what that means. What does it mean? Well, there's a couple of possible thoughts here. That let your reasonableness be made known to all men, the Lord is at hand. The Lord could be at hand in the way that He is there to help you and to support you. As we looked at David was certainly aware that God was with him and was not going to abandon him. And certainly and it would be in support of his decision to be gentle and reasonable. So the person who returns good for evil is, they're not abandoning justice. He's simply putting that into God's hands. Romans chapter 12, verse 18, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So in one way that you look at this reasonableness, you could look at it that the Lord is at hand. He is there to help. He is there to be the one that is going to execute justice. You can be reasonable and you can leave it in His hand. And certainly, that is true. The other way that this could be talking about the Lord being at hand is that the Lord is ready to judge. That He is our judge. He's ever watchful. He is very aware of our conduct. He knows how it is that you are treating others, and you will one day have to answer to the judge. So the Lord is at hand. He's nearby, ready to help. But He's also at hand, ready to judge. So this virtue, this command for us to be reasonable, to be gentle, there's a lot to commend about it. And you can't help but wonder, you know, what would the world be like if everybody would treat each other the way that David treated Saul? What would the world be like if everybody was reasonable? We're not going to ever know that, are we? Because it's not going to happen. It's never been that way. But what needs to happen is more people of God, those that call themselves people of God, need to behave with reasonableness. We would certainly have more success being pleasing to God. And we have more success at spreading the gospel also if we would be reasonable and gentle toward all people. sometimes we embarrass ourselves by saying things and doing things because we're not aware of our surroundings or we're not aware of who's watching us. And what that tells us is that we're not being consistent. We ought to be consistently reasonable and gentle in our lives. I hope this will be helpful to you. As I told somebody this morning, it's easier to preach it than it is to live it. And it's an exhortation to me, and I know to others as well. So if we can help you in any way to be obedient to the gospel of Christ, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.